and welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're digging into the kind of totally depressing history of cinnamon.
I thought you were going to make a spicy pun.
Oh, no.
No, that's okay. That's good. Cinnamon is one of my favorite spices. I love it. I put it in coffee. I put it in all kinds of things it probably shouldn't go in.
Come on, there's nothing that it shouldn't go in.
Yeah, but there are things that definitely I get a side eye when I put cinnamon in there.
It matches with both sweet and savory flavors. Come on.
It's true. And I feel in the States, a lot of people kind of pin it into the fall, but it's all year round you can use cinnamon.
It's for sure multi-seasonal.
I'm glad you agree. So the word itself has a lot of fun meanings and translations, from the Italian canella, meaning little tube, or there's wood from China and India and Iran, and the Indonesian word means sweet wood.
Oh.
In the Victorian language of flowers, which I had to look up because I had no idea what that was.
Oh, really? Oh, it's great.
I know. It's fantastic. How have I gone so long?
Victorians, y'all. They had an entire language of flowers.
Yes.
And as the name might have led you to believe.
It might have.
Yeah.
And in this language, cinnamon translates to, my fortune is yours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that sounds lovely, doesn't
it? It's very fitting, yes. Mm-hmm. Here in the United States, you're likely to encounter two types of cinnamon in the grocery store, cassia and Ceylon. Cassia is kind of the stronger in flavor and aroma and mostly originates from Indonesia, China, and Vietnam. It's also generally cheaper. Ceylon cinnamon, meanwhile, is from Sri Lanka and southern India and has more like mild sweetness to it.
Mm-hmm. And in the UK and Europe, cassia is labeled as cassia, but both can be labeled cinnamon in the US.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Both, however, are the soft inner bark of a type of evergreen shrub in the Cinnamomum genus.
That sounds like you're summoning a demon.
Cinnamomum!
See?
Oh, yeah, no, you're not wrong. Ceylon is from C. zelanicum, often also called C. verum, which means true cinnamon. Cassia, however, can come from a number of species. The flower and leaves are also edible, in addition to the bark. Cassia leaves in particular are a classic ingredient in Indian cooking, and cinnamon oil can be processed from the leaves of both type of plant. The main flavors in cinnamon come from a few oils, cinnamaldehyde, which is just a great name for anything.
It is.
Eugenol, and also camphor, which I had no idea was an ingredient in cinnamon.
No, me either.
Or ingredient, like component. Yeah. It's not like sometimes when you're mixing up your cinnamon plant then. Anyway, left to grow wild, cinnamon will grow up to a height of 30 to 50 feet, aka like 10 to 15 meters. But when it's cultivated, it's usually kept to like a human height of shrub.
That is much larger than I would have guessed.
I know, right?
I'm not really great at guessing things though.
Yeah. I've never hung out around a cinnamon plant, so.
No, no. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Cinnamon is still largely harvested and processed by hand using methods that have been passed down through farming families for centuries. The exact tools and process will vary based on the type of plant that you're dealing with, but basically, a shoot from the shrub is cut down, or if the shrub's trunk is larger, then a section of bark will be cut off. And then the tough outer bark is scraped off. And in the case of smaller shoots, the soft, moist inner bark then has to be painstakingly rubbed free from the stalk so that it can be peeled away in these long pieces that will make high quality, attractive quills. Which is one of the fabulous names for cinnamon sticks.
Yes.
I'm going to say cinnamon quills for the rest of my life. It's the best. The bark curls up as it dries, and the cinnamon can then be processed into sticks or powder or what have you.
Mm-hmm. However you consume your cinnamon.
Mm-hmm. The cool part here is that if you've got a lot of cinnamon plants, you can harvest just about continually as they come into maturity. You can also just let them go and harvest whenever it's convenient. There are some families in Sumatra that use cinnamon as an income supplement when, just whenever they need to. The uncool part here is that it is really hard, really skilled labor. And traditionally, the people selling the cinnamon have made a lot more money than the people actually harvesting and processing it. Mm-hmm. That is starting to change, though, through the work of human rights organizations and farmer co-ops, and the farmers' own work and increasing societal ability to make demands upon the industry. And by technology, there are mechanized processes that are in just continual development these days. So good news all around there. But for all those parts that have not changed, let's get into the history of cinnamon and how it has been used and farmed for millennia back. But first, let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes. So, though it was almost certainly used before this, cinnamon first appeared in written records out of China going all the way back to 2800 BCE.
Oof.
Yeah, and I believe it was a medical botanist guide.
All right.
Yeah. In 216 BCE, the town of Kuailin, meaning cassia forest, was founded in South China, suggesting that spice was integral in the region, cassia cinnamon.
Probably. According to the book History of Food, ancient Taoists considered cinnamon a food of the immortals. There are legends saying that the rabbit in the moon, because instead of the man in the moon, they've got the rabbit in the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The legend said the rabbit in the moon would use a giant cassia tree to climb down to earth and then would eat the tree's bark and prepare an elixir from it that had like magical strength powers.
That's a great story.
Yeah. And people would carry around little bits of cinnamon in pouches to kind of ward off disease and other negative vibes. Later on, cinnamon would become an integral part of five spice powder, which generally contains way more than five spices. The five is kind of metaphorical and or poetic and might mean something closer to like many or complete rather than literal five.
Extra bonus fact.
Mm-hmm.
As we go through this show, I'm just going to eventually I'm going to carry a pineapple. I'm going to have a bag of cinnamon. I'm just going to start integrating all these strange food habits and traditions.
You could, at the very least, have a really good Halloween costume.
That's true. That is such a good idea. Thank you, Lauren.
I am food stuff.
Yes. You don't know food stuff? Well, I have a story to tell you and a podcast to direct you to. Marketing opportunity. Okay.
Yeah.
So, back to cinnamon history. The ancient Egyptians used cinnamon along with other things like myrrh as a perfume during embalming. Cinnamon makes a cameo or two in the Bible. Moses uses it as an anointing oil, and the Hebrews also used it in religious ceremonies.
Mm-hmm.
Cinnamon enjoyed such high prestige, it was seen as an appropriate gift for monarchs, and records show that it, along with cassia, was given as a gift at the Temple of Apollo in Miletus. Miletus.
Huh.
Yeah. Traders from the Middle East brought cinnamon to Europe, where it was used both medicinally and to add a little something to food.
Huh.
Yeah. The Roman Empire, in particular, imported a lot of it, but more for fragrances and to spice up wine.
Yeah, they didn't really like it in their food.
Yeah. Learning a lot about the Romans.
Mm-hmm.
It had the additional use of covering the smell of funeral pyres. And there's a popular story that Roman Emperor Nero ordered a year's supply of cinnamon to burn on his second wife's funeral pyre to atone for his guilt in 65 CE.
Because he had accidentally killed her.
Yes.
Kind of accidentally on purpose.
Yes.
Oops.
Yeah. There's still well, we're going to move on. It was pretty expensive at the time, too, so he must have had gold pouches worth of guilt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Our old friend Pliny the Elder wrote in 1st century CE that 350 grams of cinnamon equaled 5 kilograms of silver, or in other words, 15 times the worth of silver by weight.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Cinnamon had other uses that justified kind of this price. It was prescribed throughout the Middle Ages to treat hoarseness, coughing, sore throat, and indigestion. And it could be used as a preservative.
Yeah. So it's got a little bit of antimicrobial properties in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Some Romans also apparently considered it an aphrodisiac. Although really at this point, I'm not sure what they didn't consider an aphrodisiac.
It's true. Probably nothing.
So many things about Romans. And of course, cinnamon was part of the Silk Road trade, that, you know, largely overland trade routes from China through India and the Middle East and up to ports of call along the Mediterranean.
It's unclear how much of this cinnamon was the cassia type and how much was Ceylon.
But hey, speaking of Ceylon cinnamon, while all of this was going on, the people on the island of Ceylon, which is present-day Sri Lanka, were developing the production techniques that would drive the cinnamon trade for hundreds of years. The Sinhalese and the Tamil people there operated in a feudal caste culture, and the folks who wound up primarily working in tending and peeling the cinnamon were a caste called the Salagama. And I'm so sorry if I mispronounced that. I really just tried. The Salagama caste were relatively recent immigrants to the island, and they didn't have much political clout, despite the importance of the work that they were doing. So they would pass their skills down from generation to generation and pass their profits up to the royal families who were running the island's kingdoms.
Mm. And at the time, and all the way up to the 16th century, Europeans weren't precisely sure of cinnamon's origins. They didn't know where it was coming from.
Yeah, yeah. This was by design of the Arabic and North African merchants who wanted to maintain
a cinnamonopoly?
Yeah, and there were a lot of stories about where cinnamon originated, where it came from, and how people got it.
Yeah, and a lot of these are pretty great.
Yeah.
Greek historian Herodotus wrote a couple of legends about it in the 5th century BCE. One, that huge birds gathered cinnamon sticks and stored them on enormous, unclimbable mountains.
What?
But tricksy humans would leave big old chunks of ox meat at the base of the mountain. And when the bird came down to collect it, the extra weight of the meat caused some of the nest to break, leaving the cinnamon sticks ripe for the picking. Up, that is.
He also wrote that cinnamon might be found near a lake that was protected by these screeching bat creatures, which gatherers could only protect themselves from by wearing full suits of tough hides with holes cut only for their eyes.
Whoa. Another story suggests that to get your hands on some cinnamon, you had to brave deep, snake-guarded canyons.
In some legends, the snakes could fly.
My goodness, getting cinnamon was a dangerous business. Going back to Pliny again, he wrote that he believed cinnamon came from Ethiopia, and the only way to get it was via sailless, oarless rafts fueled by, quote, man alone and his courage. I'm not sure. Sailless, oarless rafts. Interesting.
I don't think that.
Why
man
would you want that?
Man and his courage are really great sources of fuel, necessarily, for movement anyway.
Yeah. Pliny, I don't know about that one. All right.
Pliny, we're dubious, friend.
Yeah, we've got our doubts. Another written story from 1248 CE asserts that cinnamon was fished out of the Nile's source at World's Edge with nets. So there were a wide variety of stories. No one knew. In Europe, anyway, where this stuff was coming from. But they loved it. They loved it.
Oh, yeah.
1270 CE marks the first time cinnamon growing in Sri Lanka shows up in European writing. The rise of the Ottoman Empire and other shifting powers in the Mediterranean prompted the Europeans to expand their trade routes into Asia and North America.
And Marco Polo definitely talked all about where the relatively inexpensive cassia cinnamon comes from. But he definitely omitted information about Ceylon cinnamon, which at the time was not called Ceylon cinnamon because it would have been a pretty dead giveaway.
Right.
But during the 12 and 1300s, Venetians created something of a monopoly on the cinnamon trade. They employed these networks of Arab agents to bring the stuff overland from India to Alexandria in Egypt, where the Venetians would sail to pick it up along these highly secured trade routes that they had blocked out. And they were able to run up the price as much as they wanted because it was so popular in medieval cooking and because no one else could get their hands on it. It appears in about 2/3 of French recipes from that time.
That's quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Quite a bit of the recipes there.
And note that this was primarily for the wealthy. I mean, when we say that people loved it, wealthy people loved it.
Yeah.
Spices in general were used as a status symbol. At banquets, hosts would sometimes show off by offering a plate piled high with various spices to their guests.
Wow. That person must be rich.
Yes. It makes you think, like, what would they think of a spice cabinet?
Oh, man, that'd blow their minds.
Mm-hmm.
feel like everything we talk about on here, it was once a status symbol.
Yeah.
In a letter written by Columbus again, to Queen Isabella, he claimed that he had discovered cinnamon in the New World, but the samples he sent turned out not to be the real thing. I wonder what he was sending. Spanish explorer Gonzalo Pizarro traveled the Amazon in search of what he called cinnamon country.
Hmm. Meanwhile, the Portuguese wanted in on this trade, too. After forging a water route to India by going south around Africa, around the Cape of Good Hope, the Portuguese would found cinnamon in Ceylon in or about 1518. Mm-hmm. And so, of course,
they took over the island kingdom of Kot. Probably not saying that correctly, but I tried. Enslaved the population and ruled over the cinnamon trade for about 100 years.
And it was pretty atrocious.
Yeah.
Not only on the island itself, which was terrible enough because they really were disrupting it, you know, enslavement is certainly a different thing from a feudal caste system. They also would destroy populations along the coast of nearby Mozambique and settle there in order to keep guard over their routes back and forth from Ceylon. And, you know, just like sinking rival ships on site, like hanging any agents from other countries that they found or kingdoms floating around. It's nasty stuff.
Yeah. Kandy, another kingdom of Ceylon, teamed up with the Dutch to chase the Portuguese out of Ceylon in 1638. But now the Dutch took control of Ceylon as a payment for their military aid, a position they held for 150 years. One Dutch captain wrote, quote, "The shores of the island are full of it, and it is the best in all the Orient," it being cinnamon. "When one is downwind of the island, one can smell cinnamon 8 leagues out to sea."
Oof.
Yeah.
A jury is out on whether or not the Dutch were really that much better than the Portuguese in terms of their treatment.
No, I don't think they were. During their reign over the cinnamon trade, cinnamon rose up to become the most profitable spice in the Dutch East India Company. When word reached the Dutch that some cinnamon had been discovered off India's coast, they threatened and paid off a local king in India to destroy it.
Ooh.
Yeah. It was during this time that the demand for cinnamon grew so high that the Dutch had to figure out how to cultivate it instead of collecting bark from wild trees.
But once they did, or rather like 8 to 10 years afterward, because that's about how long it takes for the shrubs to mature, there was such a glut of cinnamon that they were afraid that the market would collapse. They allegedly burned large quantities of cinnamon in Holland in 1760 just to keep the prices up.
Yeesh. Meanwhile, the British wanted in too.
Uh-huh.
Lord Brown of the British East India Company founded the largest cinnamon estate in Asia in 1767 on the southwest coast of India. It's a bit of a tongue twister in there. Only a few years later, in 1785, the British seized control of Ceylon after their victory of the Anglo-Dutch War. And this was a huge boon to the dipping economy of the British Empire, having lost the lucrative American colonies.
However, over the next 100 years, the price of cinnamon would fall really considerably as other places around the world started to cultivate it. And its popularity would wane a little bit as things like chocolate started to come into vogue.
Yes.
Not that the two of those are bad together or anything.
I know. And I also read, like, coffee and tea helped lower the price of cinnamon. And I was like, I put cinnamon in those things.
Sri Lanka would finally gain independence from the British in 1948, by the way.
Wow.
And that brings us more or less to now. You know, cinnamon is pretty common.
Mm-hmm. Especially in the fall, like we said, and the price is fairly stable.
It's a global industry of about 35,000 tons per year.
That is quite the global industry.
Mm-hmm. And here is where I could have written a transition sometime over the past couple days that I've been working on these notes, but instead I didn't do that. So, you know, let's just take a quick break for another word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
Yes. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that concludes our history portion. Yes, yes.
It
and
does.
I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the science and culture around cinnamon, because as if all of that was not fascinating enough, you know, it, being that it has been used as a medicine for so long, a lot of people have looked into those actual properties. There have been a lot of studies specifically into the potential of cinnamon supplements to help with blood glucose levels. I'm not sure where and when that idea got passed, but but as it turns out, in some studies, taking cinnamon supplements have helped patients with type 2 diabetes lower their fasting plasma glucose levels, which of course can help them control the effects of the disease. And they also improved a few measures of cardiovascular health. You know, they reduced the bad LDL cholesterol and improved the good HDL or lipoproteins, not cholesterol technically, but yeah, and stuff like that. However, in other studies, those effects weren't so certain. I guess it's something to watch for more research about in the future. It's also been studied for its potential antimicrobial properties, as I mentioned earlier, but the practical results of that are pretty inconclusive as of yet. Basically, adding cinnamon to food might help prevent the growth of pathogenic bacteria, and researchers might eventually be able to use some of the stuff in it, in cinnamon, to help replace traditional antibiotics. Which, of course, would be great.
It would be great.
Because antibiotic resistance, as I believe we have mentioned before several times, is not the business.
It is not good, and it is on the rise.
It is. Cinnamon oil is reported to be an effective mosquito, ant, and moth repellent. But I couldn't really find any actual science to back that up. So, I don't know. If you're interested in that, then go check it out. Maybe try it. I mean, at the very worst, you're going to smell like cinnamon oil.
Yeah. This is definitely something that I would try to test, but I don't know how I would. Oh, there's a lot of things I can't control when it comes to the insects. They're not going to play ball, I don't think.
Yeah.
But I might give it a whirl.
If we ever run across a tank of mosquitoes, then.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. I'll keep some cinnamon oil prepared. On the flip side, in large enough quantities, exposure to cinnamon is not great for you. Its oils are irritants. So any time that you're using it in like a beauty product, just use a small test, before you maybe spread it all the heck over your skin. And certainly, workers in the cinnamon industry have been shown to experience symptoms like asthma and skin and eye irritation, hair loss and weight loss. Those last two things, they're not even sure how they work. Are the oils causing breakage? Are they causing prevention of hair to grow in the first place? Weird times. Anyway, and the weight loss too is even for folks who aren't doing the manual part of the labor, who are just working around the dust. They think that something's going on there. Not sure what. Cinnamon also does contain a chemical called cumarin, which can cause liver toxicity in large enough amounts, but I'm talking like silly large amounts. Like even the amount that Annie uses is nowhere near enough to cause liver toxicity.
And imagine like a bathtub full of cinnamon.
Something like that. Like maybe like back off on like heavy use of cinnamon supplements unless you're doing so under the direction of a medical professional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always had this idea that I knew was unscientific and incorrect in the back of my mind, that the reason cinnamon purportedly helped you lose weight and speed up your metabolism was because it kind of not burns, but it's got like that bite.
Yeah.
And it was just like revving things up. I truly believed this for a little while.
And that was actually sort of the basis. I didn't write down notes on this, but that was sort of the basis of the concept in European culture of spices like cinnamon that have that warming effect being good to eat in the winter as like a balance of the humors kind of concept. And I totally want to go into that in a future episode when I have more time to read up on it. But, because it's sort of counterintuitive to the way that a lot of tropical, cultures use spicy food during the summer as a way to kind of stimulate sweat production and cool you off.
Right. But there's antimicrobial things involved in both of those, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, so that's interesting.
Maybe.
Maybe. All right, that concludes the science/health portion. So let's talk about some cultural cinnamon things.
Yeah. Cinnamon, as you may have noticed, is riding the train of that pumpkin pie spice Monolith? Oh, that's a terribly mixed metaphor.
I appreciated it nonetheless.
Okay. And so cinnamon has really jumped in popularity over the past couple years, but it's also just great.
Yeah. It's such a lovely aroma. Okay. Popular cinnamon things are cinnamon toast, which was when I was a kid. That's what I had for breakfast pretty often.
Yeah.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch, which is one of my favorite cereals. Also had it very often. And this is apparently the most popular cereal in half of the United States, over half of the United States.
Okay.
It's called Croque Cannelle in France, Curiously Cinnamon in UK and Ireland, and Cinny Minis in Poland.
Huh.
So you can get it out of the US.
Yeah.
There's Cinnabon, cinnamon rolls in general, and here we have a place called Cinnaholic. Snickerdoodles.
Oh, it's one of my favorite cookies.
Oh, they're so good.
Yeah.
And apparently there's cinnamon in Coca-Cola.
Huh.
I found myself somehow on the Coca-Cola website when I was like, cinnamon things. Like, how did I end up here? I guess it's in there. And a lot of cultures outside of the U.S. use it in savory dishes way more than we do anyway.
Yeah.
Like it's popular in Indian curries or in tagine or chili.
Sure.
Yeah.
And cinnamon whiskey.
Yes.
Although Fireball had been around for a couple decades, it leapt to this sudden and much contested prominence in like 2012 to 2013. It reached about 2% of the overall dollar share of spirits in the United States. And what that means is that 2% of all the money in the country being spent on booze was going to sales of Fireball.
That's crazy.
I know. I mean, you know, it was a big time for flavored whiskeys in general.
Okay.
But like, dang, y'all.
Wow.
Huh. I also wanted to talk about the Cinnamon Challenge.
Oh, boy.
Which is a dare of sorts. If you haven't heard of it, you're supposed to swallow a spoonful of cinnamon in less than a minute without the aid of any water or other helpful liquids.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds simple, but in case you've never actually seen it happen, trust me, it's not. The dare has been around for at least a decade, but it went viral again in like 2012. Thanks, YouTube. A search on YouTube, by the way, pulls up 1.6 billion videos on the subject.
Yeah.
The reason that it's so difficult is that because cinnamon is ground tree bark, it contains a lot of stiff cellulose that resists saturation with water. And therefore also like spit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you can see this in action if you sprinkle cinnamon over coffee because it just kind of sits there until you physically mix it in. Or if you put a drop of water on a little bit of cinnamon that you've got like in a spoon or on a dish, the water will bead up instead of sinking in. Your saliva, similarly, cannot mix in to a spoonful of cinnamon, which means that you cannot swallow it, which means that you'll choke on it and like spit out a cloud of cinnamon and probably continue choking for a while.
Right.
And, like, look, like, the dare is, like, a little bit mostly harmless,
mm-hmm.
but it can have some serious consequences. If you accidentally breathe cinnamon in, that cellulose that I mentioned will just sit in your lungs, like, not breaking down, but instead slow-releasing that cinnamaldehyde that is an irritant that can cause chronic inflammation and eventually scarring in your lungs, which is like having emphysema. You don't want it.
No.
A few teens actually choked hard enough that they collapsed a lung, and at least one actually choked to death. Oof. So if you're looking for a gross food challenge, I'd recommend maybe chugging a gallon of milk instead, which will probably just make you throw up a lot.
Yeah.
Actually, don't do that either.
No.
No, don't do either of those things. And thus concludes Lauren's Killjoy Corner.
Oh, yay. Joy killed.
Yeah.
I'm really glad I wasn't a kid during these things because this is a dumb thing I would have done.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would have. I wasn't much into dares.
I'm like, okay, well, I don't want to give away too much. Don't send me any dares, people.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds like a dare in and of itself.
No.
Come on, I need Annie. Don't hurt her. There is also, of course, an episode, of Deadwood, the HBO show Deadwood, called Unauthorized Cinnamon.
Oh, I love that title.
I know, right?
I wish we could steal it for this episode.
But. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, no. I guess Deadwood gets to keep that one.
All right.
But yeah, that's about what we have to say about that.
Yeah. This one was the history was so spread out. There was no, like, one place.
Yeah.
Look all over.
It was a doozy of collection of materials. But speaking of a collection of materials, it's time now for some listener mail.
Yay.
Yeah.
All right. So Olivia sent us this anecdote and suggestion. This summer, we, which was her family, went on a cruise around the Mediterranean Sea where we experienced all sorts of cuisine. One day we went to Mykonos where we were given a sweet-tasting Greek dessert submerged in water. We had no idea what it was, and when we went back home to D.C., I frantically searched the internet for what the mystery food was. I suddenly came across the sugary dessert's name, which was Vanilla Submarine, or...
What?
Yeah, I know. Or Greek Spoon Sweet. I tried to make it, but unfortunately it came out nothing like what I had in Mykonos. We found Greek Spoon Sweet online and ordered it. I hope you found this interesting and we'll look into it for a future episode. Yes, we did. I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
I'm very intrigued. A spoon underwater. I can't even. Oh, well. Yes.
We'll have to. We need a food budget. We need a budget
we
for
really
ordering
do.
These kind of things.
We really do.
All right.
Who can we talk to about that?
Hey, boss.
I know you're listening.
Also, Claire wrote in with this note about butter. You mentioned that butter takes a long time and effort to make. It is true. However, as a former preschool teacher and a current mother, I've learned how to use this to your advantage. If it's a rainy day and the kids are getting squirrely, making butter is a great activity. Kids get so excited about food they can make themselves. And there's the added benefit of keeping their hands busy for about 15 minutes. And then they get to learn a little bit more about the food they eat as well. Just a tip for anyone who is trying to keep active minds and hands busy.
I would love doing that as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
We got a lot of teachers or people who have to interact with kids right in with this one. I wish I had done it, but that's cool.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I'm disappointed that as a tiny child, like, I could have put all that endless energy to work.
To making butter.
Yeah. And then eating butter.
Yes.
It would have been great. So yeah, y'all try it with your kids and I don't know, if there's like adorable photographs of the process that you want to send us, that would be, I love other people's kids.
Yes, that would be great. And you can send those to our email, which is foodstuff@howstuffworks.com.
We also have a social media presence, weird.
Strange.
We're on Facebook and Twitter at FoodstuffHSW, and we're also on Instagram at Foodstuff. We hope to hear from you, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.